Welcome to the world of Muscle Smoke and Mirrors, where it's all about muscle, health, history, training, nutrition, bodybuilding, and state of mind.
Hey, listener, you're back with another episode of The World of Muscle with Randy and myself, Tamash. Hey, Randy.
Good morning, Tamash.
This is episode number 24, and today we're talking about supplements.
Everybody's favorite topic.
We're going to delve into a little bit about the history and what we think of them. So let's start with the definition of what a supplement is. I'm reading this out straight from dictionary.com, and it has two types. It can be used as a noun. And the first definition is something added to complete a thing, supply a deficiency, or reinforce or extend the whole. And as a verb, it says that it is to complete, add to, or extend by a supplement. So it is not a replacement of, you and I were talking just before we hit record, that is not something that would replace a food, but it is in addition to.
Which most people do. They think they can replace.
Well, I mean, using marketing, it's a meal replacement, right? So,
yeah.
Because you can just chug it back. It takes you 15 seconds to mix it with water or milk or whatever people mix it with. And it's very, very convenient. But before we get into that, you know what? How about a little history lesson of where supplements came from or what their story is?
Well, specifically, I'll stick with it within bodybuilding. For the listeners, I want to be clear that my opinion isn't always what I'm writing in Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors, because Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors is supposed to be an objective history of bodybuilding and steroids and diet and supplements. And often many of the things that I write about, and it might sound good, I might not agree with, but I try. Obviously, my opinions will come into the book somehow. But in bodybuilding, most people be surprised that there's so much advertisement, marketing, and supplements. It drives the industry today.
But, well, that's why I wanted to ask you to go back to the history of how it all started, because we'll get into what it became. But before all the hype and all of that, like, what was the purpose of supplementation? So going back to Eugene Sandow's turn of the 20th century, end of the 19th century.
Well, I was actually hitting there before you cut me off. We'll go back to Eugene Sandow and his plasmin. Like, I mean, there's little hints of food supplementation going back, but there wasn't the technology other than separating and powdering, like the Ovaltine, George Wander and Nestle, those guys were actually creating powdered foods and actually trying to create a milk supplement back in the late 1800s. But the technology was not there at all to do what we're doing today. For the first 50 years in bodybuilding, the model was food and exercise, fresh air, and sleep. And they lived off that, and supplements were basically.
And what kind of I guess champions did that produce? Like, who are the notable people of those?
Well, any of the bodybuilders before. Well, you want to go back to Gremick and Clancy Ross, those guys in the 1940s. You know, go back before that, Lionel Strongford and
Steve Reeves.
Reeves was in the mid and late 40s and early 50s. He was gone from competitive bodybuilding by 1950, mm-hmm. 1950, I believe. But these guys, Steve Reeves started to use, he said so in his night. I couldn't find him writing about it back in the day, back in the 40s, but he wrote in the 90s in his book that he was starting to use some of the powdered foods at the time, powdered milk, because the war efforts really advanced the powdering of eggs and food and milk, yep. And soy started to come in. That's actually was the first boon into bodybuilding in the very, very early 1950, like 1950 by Irvin Johnson, who got a hold of what was called Dr. Vern's soy protein, and he put his own name on Irvin Johnson's protein. And he appeared in Iron Man magazine and Strength and Health very early promoting B complex and soy protein. But Johnson was really big on promoting protein, not necessarily soy. Where Bob Hoffman, when Bob Hoffman saw the business that Urban was making off this protein, you got to remember, up to 1950, the Iron Game was just selling photos, workout schedules, and barbells. And you can only sell somebody one set of barbells and maybe some additional weights, but he's not coming back for new barbells all the time. But when you, with supplements, this was something that had to be renewed and refreshed monthly. And this was a boon to the industry. Hoffman wrote a book in 1939 called Better Nutrition. It actually wasn't a bad book at all. He was up on a lot of stuff, and it was all natural foods. It was nothing about supplements at all, because a lot of these guys did not believe in the supplements when they first came in, because they thought it should all become from food. But when Hoffman saw the business Urban Johnson was doing, Urban Johnson, a.k.a. Real Blair, this is in Chicago before Blair came to the West Coast in California in 1958. But they changed their tune, and Hoffman got into soy, and he stuck to soy because he owned some farmland that he grew soy. So he basically married the bean, as I said, in volume one, and he kept promoting soy, where Urban Johnson dropped soy very quickly when he got hooked up with the Wander Company in Illinois, where they created Ovaltine, and they also created some supplements for the medical industry, OptiPro. That was one of the first milk and egg, and that's what Urban Johnson got hold of. And then the Weeders came on board, and Johnson really, he created what some people still know as old school bodybuilding nutrition, where he started looking at enzymes. He was getting people, he was taking the powdered soy, he was actually putting it into, before he went to milk and egg, getting it into tablets, trying to increase the protein content of the, because I think the early stuff was only like 40 or 50% protein with the soy protein. And but his tablets, he got it up to like, I think 80%, then before he switched over to his milk and egg protein. But Johnson was smart too, because he knew to get to mix the protein powders with, he was starting to promote raw milk and raw eggs. In Chicago, you could get, in Illinois, you could get raw milk at that time through a prescription from the doctor, right? That's probably one of the reasons he moved to California, because it was so readily available. He knew to rebuild that powder with foods like that. But
so he literally used it as a supplement to the food.
Yeah, we can't. I won't get into more with Johnson. There's a lot more. We can do more shows in terms of how he used saw protein and protein powders and stuff like that. But the supplement industry really took off. Like, I mean, Nutrilite, a vitamin thing, it started before the 1950s, and even multi-level marketing of it. Because before the vitamins and minerals, vitamins weren't really discovered until the teens. And by the 1930s, all the major vitamins were identified, I think. And they started to become synthesized. Before that, the magazines were promoting like juicing. Food concentrates, like to juice to get the vitamins and minerals. And yeah, guys like Perry Rader, the Raiders who ran Iron Man magazine, Hoffman, and they weren't on board with those early vitamins. They thought you get it from food, and they believe you can get it all from food. But again, the two things, something coincided. The fact that they saw how much money can be made. At the same time, there was a factual realization that the soils were becoming depleted. And that was their launch pad to get into the supplements, because they said, people, you know, we do believe you can get it from food, blah, 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 but the soils are being depleted, and which was true. But then some of the guys really jumped on the supplement bandwagon and started pushing.
That's one of the main things today too, right? That's all you got to have your supplements. There's no way you can eat all the foods all the nutrients that your body needs from your food.
Yes, but it morphed. It morphed from you're not getting enough of the supplements in your food and you should get it from supplements, to a different paradigm of, hey, more is going to build more muscle,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
Hoffman's Better Nutrition book that I was just talking about, 39, he re-released in 1953 and again in 1961 and totally changed it. The high protein method to fat loss, the high protein method to weight gain. There's about six more chapters all on protein, and if you take this amount, that's when you start seeing, look at these massive before and after, these gains being made. Some of them are legitimate with Urban Johnson, and again, another show we can talk more about that, but that's where we are today. You want muscle, forget supplement. The supplement industry divided into two. The alternative health practitioners who were sincerely just looking to restore health, right, and create optimal health. And then the bodybuilding and the sports field would say, hey, you're going to become a super athlete, especially when drugs came in the 1960s. They're trying to hang on the hat of supplements, right? And yeah. Meanwhile, it had nothing to do with supplements. It's drugs, and that still skews the whole thing today, right to the point where people are spiking their supplements with drugs to make people think it is a supplement. Then they remove that.
When did that begin?
Tom Sciola got accused of this with hot stuff. He was accused of putting
late 80s.
Well, he came out in 89 with methyl testosterone, which I interviewed Tom and I asked him that. He said that's reprehensible. He did not do it. MetRx was accused of putting clenbuterol in there. Jerry Branum still stands by that. He said he believes that's his opinion that it was spiked with clenbuterol. And then what's all going on now? And there's a whole thing about with these athletes and using supplements and drugs, using the supplements as a distraction that they are spiked. And if they get caught taking the real drugs, they can claim accidental contamination. They're doing that with the pro hormones, but the pro hormones are basically banned now. But there's so many substances that are borderline or are actually steroids, but they haven't been scheduled or classified as that. So people are sticking anything in there. So the bodybuilding industry has really gone off awry, and it's totally different from what you might call the alternative health. But they too have stretched the boundaries of from optimal health to super health, superfoods, all that stuff. There's no such thing as superfoods, right? Cod oil, superfood, and certain supplements. I know what you mean.
Every year there's like some new superfood, and right now, the biggest thing you hear about is chaga mushrooms and all kinds of other.
Oh, the juices, the goji juices.
Oh, yeah. It's already come and gone. Goji berries, that was like 5 years ago.
Oh, I know. They've
or have they resurfaced?
I don't know. I just don't even pay attention to it anymore. The pharmacists, the nutraceuticals, there's all sorts of multi-level marketing, and then these drinks, these green drinks, and they've got million different things again. That's the whole question about supplements, in my opinion. I'm a raw food eater. You have been raw food. You do some raw foods, but it's a total different mindset, and you just can't stuff everything into your body like that and in a processed manner. That's just not how our genome has come along to understand food. And especially with epigenetics, we're finding there's a lot more to how our body responds. The food is almost like information, as are our thoughts, especially our environment, right, that affect our genome. And we're never in history have we addressed a food supply like we have it now. Mm-hmm. Like the assault of chemicals and processing and food parts. We eat food pieces and parts and mash it all together, strip it of a lot of its natural cofactors and stuff it in large amounts, right? And that's what the supplement industry does.
Yeah, and it's like putting the kitchen sink in everything. The more there is in it, the more they can claim it does for you, and I guess the more of it they'll sell.
Like you go back to the 50s, Johnson's early B complex, they were very 5 milligrams, I think 6 milligrams, and mixed with rice polishings. It's still mixed with some of that food because they still didn't know what else was working along with it.
Yes.
But as technology came in, they extracted and created these high purified forms, synthetic forms of 200 milligrams of B3, B1, B2. Our body's never seen that before. And that amount of B complex in one shot without the food matrix that it usually comes in. So you're actually now dispensing these supplements like drugs. That was the big criticism back in the 40s and the 50s, that the doctors were using the pharmaceuticals and dispensing these drugs and they're intrusion into the body. But they made them a lot of money, but they're the poor alternative practitioners, naturopaths and homeopaths. Well, the homeopaths had their remedies, but the naturopaths, all they could promote is a good, healthy diet. But then with this notion that their souls are being depleted, blah, 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 we're missing this, we're missing that, they too started dispensing supplements like doctors dispense pharmaceuticals. And that's It's very convenient, very lucrative, and nobody now is championing the soils like Weston Price, who studied the tribes. He was more concerned with the soils, and because he analyzed food samples from all around the world for decades after he stopped his 10-year traveling in the 1930s and watched the nutrient content of the foods and how it varied even from season to season and from geographical location to geographical location, right?
And it's easier to forget about addressing the cause and no pun intended, addressing the root of the problem.
Yeah.
It was easier to just make some pills synthetically and sell them.
Yeah, we're going to plug the holes later, right? Yeah. We'll just plug the holes later. And then we become, the supplement industry also now too is become a reactionary system. But although in the alternative medical field, they do emphasize prevention way more. Prevention doesn't even exist in orthodox allopathic medicine. It's just we'll treat the symptoms as disease later, right?
And you get extra symptoms from what you're taking, we'll treat that with other.
Yeah, it's just that's their bonanza is the drug bonanza, because the elderly end up to 10 to 15 different drugs. Most primarily the other ones are treating symptoms and side effects of the previous drugs, right? So at least in alternative medicine, they do still have the notion of preventative. But again, they can say, well, you can take these all these different supplements as prevention as well. But what kind of stress? That's my concern, is what kind of stress are you placing on the body with these supplements? Because the body does not recognize the food in the form you're eating it, with the concentrations you're eating it. And how does the body have to deal with this? How does it affect the genome and this and that? And I said this in an interview with Charles Welling years back. I said, Francis Pottinger with his cats and Robert McCarrison with his rats, they used their subjects, they tested their subjects with nutrition, but they took them through gestations, generations, pregnancies. And that's where you're really going to see a deficiency show up. Is through the pregnancies when the fetus or the subject is developing in the womb. So the nutrition before, during, after pregnancies, and that's when they'd exposed a lot of the processing and food processing. So if you want a 6-week study, shows nothing in an adult, because you're already growing and established, and the body's pretty resilient. It's not going to break down in 6 weeks. It takes years for this to show.
I mean, it does. So that's take a couple. What aging is?
Yeah, just a breakdown. So we can. Take groups of any type of omnivore animals, whether you want to do rats, which are omnivore, whatever, just to show, okay, we'll give them a typical American diet in one. And the other one, we'll give them pure raw foods, how they would eat it, say, in nature, like McCarrison did. Those are the controls. And then we'll get another two groups and duplicate the diets. But now we'll add supplementation. We'll see if supplementation assists in the American diet one, and if it interferes with the whole natural one. Are we adding a stress by putting this processed processed food parts into the body? Because, as I said this 100 times before, when you take a protein powder or a high dose vitamin stripped of its cofactors and synergists, like vitamin C comes with bioflavonoids, rutin, it's a whole complex. It's a vitamin C complex. Ascorbic acid really won't even cure scurvy, a vitamin C deficiency. It comes with a complex, but people are taking large doses of ascorbic acid only, grams of it. So are you creating this stress that when the body sees this large amount of just part of the complex, does it have to draw from its own tissues to properly process and assimilate what you're taking in? And does that over time create a degenerative process? And I feel that it does. And I think we can see that we're not looking, even in the fitness industry, we're not seeing great longevity. We're seeing people broken down into their 60s and their 70s and their arthritis and root and bent over and hip replacements and stuff. This is not ideal at all. What you're looking for, you know, why is this happening? Is it other factors in the environment? But I'm sure massive amounts of processing and processed foods, and that, when I say processed foods, that means supplements, because you can't go into a powder or a pill without a good degree of processing, no matter the quality of food that you start with.
Now, if you're bringing up processing, it's kind of cooking at the same time, right? Cooking is also processing.
Well, it's very hard to process without adding heat or solvents or solvents, right? Pressure, solvents, and heating is because you just can't get it to a powder without that level of processing.
Yeah, but I'm actually talking about cooking your food.
Well, that adds an additional cooking the food. That gets into the whole raw food argument, which you can do multiple shows on as to why, what are the real advantages of. But this, the whole crux of all of these, whether it's raw food, whether it's processed supplements, is our genome. And the genome, I'll say something that's controversial, but we'll leave it at that. With epigenetics, the fact that our genome is dynamic, it's not static, it's just simple instructions how to build a human being, that this epigenetics is really putting the Darwinistic evolutionary mechanism on its ass, because it's defying a lot of things. And there are other factors even that may go beyond epigenetics that are very mind-blowing, and the fact that, you know, it's very sensitive, very sophisticated and complex. And like I said, in terms of our environment, how we react to our environment, how we react to our mental state and our thoughts, and how we react to the foods that we eat. So it's very important. And that, I think, is the underlying foundation of all the stuff about diet and supplements and drugs, that we think we're getting this great, you know, life extension plans because we're going to take these hormones or these supplements, and they're not, they're probably, if anything, shortening the lifespan.
Now, instead of all this doom and gloom, how could one actually use supplements in a, or what type of supplements could someone benefit from if there was such a thing? You mentioned juicing earlier, right? Which is as still processing, but you're processing the whole thing.
Juicing has millennia of history, right? Like, yeah. I mean, whether you're juicing olive oil, you know, you're taking the oil out of the olive, or you're just biting into a juicy set of grapes, you're juicing automatically in your mouth, even though the fiber is falling behind it, right? Mm-hmm. But that has a long history. And food concentrates, they do have, like cream. Cream arises to the top in a natural manner. It doesn't really need any process, chemical, or maybe just a bit of mechanical. Like, cream will naturally rise to the top of the milk. You can take that cream, put it in a jar, and just kind of whoosh it around, and eventually separate it into butter.
Yes.
So these things, and all this dairy broken into different parts, has different effects on the body. And I thought this was actually bullshit when I first was reading the works of Von der Planitz, right? But they do, again, this is for another show. These aspects of dairy all have different effects on the body as opposed to just being together in milk.
I mean, thinking of whey, that separates as well as you make cheese.
Pretty much. It does. But again, if most people aren't going to chug down a whole whey in the way in the form of powder is totally different than
the
whey.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I was actually talking about the liquid whey. Right?
Yeah, we can talk about that in another
just
episode.
As you brought up, cream rises to the top, the whey stays at the bottom.
Yeah, I was getting around to the point of what supplements, okay, where I would take. I have taken, and I'm off and on. I would take freeze-dried liver. Okay, yes, this processing is freeze-dried. It's whole liver. Liver is in itself, you could call that a superfood if you wanted to, because it is just it's been a mainstay in bodybuilding. Well, not so much anymore because it's been pushed aside for the more esoteric supplements. But liver is just loaded with, you know, not just protein, but B6, B12, folic acid, zinc, selenium, everything your body needs to for. Like Weston A. Price, who studied the tribes and their whole natural foods, he said, these are bodybuilding foods. He used that word bodybuilding, not in the context we do, but in terms of building the body, the bodybuilding foods. Liver, like I would say just organ meats, you know, are a good supplement. But if you can't get the liver, you know, freeze-dried liver from organic grass-fed cows. I've done cod liver oil, again, which is the oil from the liver, which has the full vitamin A complex, the full vitamin D complex, EPA, DHA, you know, the derivatives of the essential fatty acids that many people have trouble bringing, omega-3s, omega-6, through the elongation and desaturation phases to get EPA and DHA. They can be in the fish oil if the quality is there. And that's the big question, as we did that show on the fermented cod liver oil, the integrity of it, that that question arose. But you get something, some Radiant C, which has the plant, which is, again, it's been processed, but it's not.
It is from whole foods, right?
Whole plants. It is the plant in the powder. The powder is the plant, not part of the plant, right?
Yeah, it's not fractionated. It's the whole thing with all the byproducts. Obviously, the processing will kill some.
Yeah, and again, it can be argued that it's not in its full natural form, and I agree with that. But I'm just, you know, for those, I'm not into the, again, a lot of people are taking these greens where there's a million different things thrown into here. The communication of the body, I think, you know, some people react to these things because when you have 50 or 60 different ingredients, going into one product, again, everybody's different, right? That's why we have all these commercials with even with the drugs. You know, you take these drugs, but then you got the million side effects you got to watch for. There are side effects too with supplements, mm-hmm. right? It's not nearly to the extent of a pharmaceutical drug. Yeah,
it's not as concentrated, I guess.
No, and it's not it's not as dangerous, but there are still effects. And so
going back to how you could choose quality products, and quality over quantity is always, I mean, that's what you and I always talk about, right? It's a little more important, tons more important.
This is kind of a shameless plug for you, but I don't take many, right?
Yeah.
But when I do, I will ask you what you found, because I know you had Tomas is not as stupid as he sounds. He's actually quite experienced, and he's like a bloodhound. He'll go out and try to find the best quality he can. And if I will often ask him what's his opinion on that, because I know he'll spend way more time researching it than I ever would. So
I mean, I need it for my clients, because, as you know,
that's right. They want it.
You and I will do. We'll go through the painstaking way of eating as much food as we need to eat, and eat it raw in its whole form. But clients, they need the quick fix. So
I have them too.
Next best thing to having the real deal.
Yeah, and that's why I get some of them. I just make them available to the guys who want it.
Yeah, there's only a handful of companies that actually create high quality product. So the main things to look for is always read the labels. So whenever you're looking at supplements, read the labels. If there's words that are impossible to pronounce, put them back. You can also look at each, and with the internet, you can look at each and every ingredient, type out what it is. It'll tell you everything about that specific ingredient. If it doesn't sound like it adds value to your health, it might not be a good thing. And some people have reasons why this certain thing is in there. It's to extend shelf life. It's to extend it, to lubricate the machines that are doing it, so they don't have to clean it as often. For whatever reason, if it doesn't add value to you, put it back. If it adds value to you, then keep it. And always, always look for quality over quantity.
Remember, the industry really isn't regulated. Some people argue that it is regulated through SHE, the Dietary Supplement Health Act of 1994, but it is not. Like these, like I said, some of these charlatans, even in the bodybuilding industry, they're not above spiking.
We haven't gotten to that part of the book yet, right? You're still writing that, because this kind of all started in the late 80s, early 90s, when the charlatans came.
But I know, and I've talked to people who are in the industry and are in it only because, yeah, it's a way of making a living. They believe in it. They absolutely believe in it, and yes, they're doing their best to get their best ingredients.
Quality, yes.
And there's others who are in it, and some of these names are recognizable, and they themselves believe it's bullshit, right? So you got a whole myriad of opinions out there. And I have drafted some 80s and a bit of 90s nutrition going back 8 years. I was, in fact, before the first book got split, I was communicating extensively with Jeff Everson, who was trying to help me unravel the MedRx and all the lawsuits with Scott Conley and all that stuff, because he had EAS, Bill Phillips, and all that stuff. But this started to really ramp up in the 80s. And I've drafted a fair amount on the 80s nutrition and diet and supplements and stuff, but it just got pushed aside. And
it's coming.
Yeah, but that's supposed to be the fourth book of volume 3, is the supplements and the drugs from the 80s and beyond. But you and I are always getting asked about supplements and emails about supplements and diet and stuff. So we thought we'd address this today to some degree.
Exactly. And if you have any questions, just let us know. We'll address them. And whether it's our opinion or facts, we'll distinguish them. I think we're done with that. I don't want to keep going for too long. And again,
going to some updates.
Yeah. So let's get into some news and updates. We missed a couple of episodes because we tried it. I went away. I was away down under. In Australia for a little bit over 2 weeks, and we couldn't find a way of, with the time difference, or 16-hour time difference, to actually record a podcast.
Well, you actually wanted to.
I did.
I thought, let's just wait to get back.
Yeah, I wanted to do it. It was just the timing didn't work. When it worked for me, it didn't work for you. And yeah, I was sleeping when you were up and you were sleeping when I was up.
It allowed our last podcast to stay up there. And that was my radical claim in the chin bar. And the feedback was actually quite good with the chinning system, our little video there. Unfortunately, you guys did not get your YouTube moment or your Darwin Award because I did not follow back. But the feedback's been really cool. And the chin-up bar is great. The chin-up bar is really
cool. What about your clients? How are they taking it? What are they saying?
They love it. They love both the variations of grips and the fact that I can put Tom Barton's mag bars up there because they love the mag bars for pull-downs. So I can put the mag bars up for chins. And some of them are just outstanding chinning bars as well. Just the way you can get that rafter, like jumping up in between two rafters with your palms and doing chin-ups. And that's the feel that you get. So I'm really happy with it. That whole rack. I could do a whole video just on that whole geezer rack that I built, all the stuff. I get a lot of use out of that for squatting, calves, progressive push-ups, rowing off the rack, and the chin-ups and stuff. But
except stepping. You have so many things in the way. It's hard to film.
Yeah, I know. I got everything crammed in there. But yeah, I'm augmenting my assist chin. For those who cannot do regular chin-ups, I also have a really good assist chin dip where I have the same principle of the chinning bar on that, and now I'm adding a more like Vince Gironda-style dip bars to it as well. So this it's going to be a souped-up assist chin dip machine.
And I'm sure we'll have a little video or photos of that one too.
Yep, and then I dare to alter my hammer strength machine, and that's going to be cool when it's done. But other than that,
Speaking of the books are going. They're still going strong. We've heard back from quite a few people about them and how they've enjoyed them. Some of them are on social media as well.
Also, some storylines brewing for book three with the Arnold Classic. Arnold's boy, what's his name? Cedric McMillan came in second. Somebody said he was winning the first three rounds and he lost the fourth opposing. How the hell do you do that? Again, how could one round be such an impact round that he could, if that's the truth? But at least McMillan came in second. But the big news of that contest is that Jim Mannion, Steve Weinberger, Sandy Rinaldi, and Rafael Santanja were served with subpoenas for antitrust violations. So this is going to be very interesting to see what plays out here with the industry because this has never happened before. And I think the industry is going to be called out finally. And we can only wait and see what happens here.
Yes, and we'll keep you posted as we know, as we find out ourselves. Okay, thanks, Randy. I think that covers it all.
All right, talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
Thank you for listening to the World of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. We hope you've enjoyed the content of this episode, and we're looking forward to sharing more next time.